And that was Kill It Kid with Run, a song we're all kind of familiar with at the moment. We've seen it on TV a lot, on an advert that's running at the moment, so it's a good tune. I'm Debbie Hutchinson. I'm with you here until 3:30. We're coming live from the Rose Festival in St. Anne's. And this radio programme is the third in our series Festivals of the North Side, and that's a sound and vision project supported by the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland. The sun is shining. The place is hopping down here. And I'm joined now by Rosaline Hobbs from the Federation of Business and Professional Women, sorry, the International Federation of Business and Professional Women. Not an organisation I've heard about. Maybe just tell us a little bit about it, Rosaline.
Okay, we are an international, we're affiliated to international, but I'm the president of the Howth and Sutton district, but it actually draws members from all over Dublin. It's really a Dublin club.
Okay.
We meet the second Monday of every month in the Marine Hotel. We try to have speakers, especially with a high profile. For instance, we had somebody last month from a solicitor to talk about wills. We've had Avril Power, Brenda Morgan, who is an adjudicator. We run a public speaking competition for young girls.
Okay.
They're taught how to chair a meeting during their transition year. We just run the competition, but it's regional and it's national. And then there's a north-south dimension to it also. Okay. We meet in the Marine Hotel in Sutton the second Monday of every month.
And it's membership-based, so do people pay to be members?
They do, yes. It's €70 a year. If they join halfway through the year, it's half price.
Okay. And what kind of people are joining? I mean, obviously it's business women.
It's business and professional, but you can be retired and you don't necessarily have to be working at the moment. And we don't discriminate against housewives because they are often business people as well.
Okay.
If you're running a home and a family, we don't differentiate between, you know, I think we call that they're employed, but they're not gainfully employed.
Right. And are you yourself a businesswoman? What's your business yourself?
I run a bed and breakfast.
Okay. In Howth itself?
It is, yes.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's a tough enough business for the last few years.
It is, yes. Yeah. But, you know, we soldier on.
And do you think, I asked this, I already know the answer, but do you think that women face particularly different challenges than men in owning businesses, and do you think they operate different kind of businesses?
Oh, they do, yes. I mean, in our club we have a very wide cross-section of business people and professional people as well. You know, we have teachers and there's a few bed and breakfasts I know in it, and nurses. But we're really out to recruit to continue the club because, you know, like all clubs, they're struggling at the moment to get membership.
And is it a social club as well?
Yes, very much so. We organise events. I hired a bus for a group a month ago, and we took them to the Titanic experience and went to a famous garden centre called Dobby's in Lisburn, and then we ended up in Carlingford having a meal. We do. We've done the Dublin City Tour bus because even though we live in Dublin, it's been a long, long time since most of us had actually even been on the boardwalk.
Yeah.
We did the Liffey Canal cruise, the Liffey cruise. Yeah, so very much a social aspect of it, and it's just a lovely club for a network of women.
Okay, yeah, and it can be hard enough if you're running a business yourself to meet people, can't it?
It is. Well, up to now, this is the first time we've done something like this. We just got a very good flyer out. Compliments from one of our members who's a printer, and we just thought there'd be an ideal opportunity to get to a lot of people, because like that again, if you're only talking to people on a one-to-one basis, it takes an awful long time to try and bring in new members on a one-to-one basis, you know. So we just thought that this is an ideal opportunity to meet a lot of different
Okay, so this
people.
Is the first year you've come to the
first time we've ever done this. Yes.
Yeah. Oh, brilliant. So do you have a stall here today?
We do. We're down it's a stripe, blue stripe, not too far from the Howth tram.
Okay, yeah.
There's a few people in the tent, but we're just outside. It's the Rotary Club are in there also, and there's an art group and a flower group.
Okay, and you can join up or find out
They
more
can,
information
or they can just
stuff.
Come along and talk to us, and we'll invite them to our first meeting. Our first meeting is the 9th of September.
Okay, and do you have stuff coming up you can tell people about or that they might be interested in? Or?
Yes, I know we have a little mini fashion show, and we have our public speaking competition, which actually does take up quite a bit of time.
Okay, tell us a bit about that.
We have schools that take part in this competition because we've been running it for about 30 years.
Oh, secondary schools? Is it girls?
Yes, it's usually girls during transition year. And the teachers It's extracurriculum, so but if the teacher is interested in public speaking, that we call it public speaking, but in actual fact it's very unique. It's where they're taught, three girls are taught how to chair a meeting. So you have a speaker, a voter of thanks, and a chairperson. Mm. And we run the competition ourselves in Hoth Club, but clubs from all over Dublin take part. And then the winners meet the national finalists, because we have clubs in Galway, Tuam, Tullamore, and they run the same competition. And then up to last year, we actually had a North-South dimension, where the winners of the North met the winners of the South.
Okay, all right. So, and was it, what made you specifically target like public speaking for girls? There's a lack of experience?
Yes, well, I mean, there's a lot of public speaking competitions out there, but this, I just think this one is very unique.
Yeah.
It's really well worth anybody who's interested in coming along to hear these young girls. They're absolutely amazing, where they can stand up there and they choose their own topic. They're taught by their teacher, obviously, and she encourages them and she helps them along the way. But on the day when the competition is on, they've got to stand up there and chair this meeting. And there's a time frame in which they have to do it. And it's just unbelievable. And quite a few of them have come back to us in years later to tell us how it's done to them, and particularly on their CV.
Okay, yeah, I can imagine that, because I know, having done debate in college myself, it can be quite intimidating, especially if you go into a very male environment.
Yes,
and like, you're talking about guys who are in debating society, so they're extra confident at public speaking. And I just think to give kind of women and girls that kind of environment where they feel a bit safer learn it, that's a great
idea. They're just competing against one another.
Absolutely. And where can people find out? Do you have a website?
Well, we have a website, but it's in Galway, and at the moment it's not very active. We're in the process of maybe setting up our own page. I can be contacted at 8391391.
8391391,
Or it's hobbs@aircom.net.
Okay, and if you want any further information, you can come along here to the Rose Festival, and you're over by the tram, which is the transport museum.
Very close to the tram, yes.
Close to the tram.
And it's the tent with a stripe.
Okay, so, and it's the second Monday of every month that you meet in the Marine Hotel in Sutton.
Yes,
at 8 p.m. The next Monday, the next meeting then is the 9th?
The 9th of September.
Okay, so you're on holidays.
Yes, we are. I thought I was.
But you're working today.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. Well, listen, thanks for coming along to talk to us.
Thank you very much.
Best of luck today.
Thank you.
Everything goes well. I hope you get lots
of new
members
as well. And we'll be
here
tomorrow also.
Okay, and you'll be here tomorrow as well. Okay, listen, we'll take some music, and here's some nice summery music. Thanks,
bye-bye.
Rosaline. Okay.
Thank you.
And that was Magic Carpet Ride from Mighty Dubcats. Some nice summer music to get us into the mood. Now, I am joined by two local women, Margaret Bonner and Betty Craven, and they're from the Old Colester Society. Ladies, you're welcome to the show. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Okay, so tell us a little bit about the Old Colester Society. What is that? What does it involve?
The Old Colester Society grew from family history classes, stroke genealogy classes, which we were doing earlier in the year. We were actually giving the classes. We found that a lot of people were very interested in the area directly around them. So we decided we would try and set up an exhibition. And we got together a group of volunteers. We had no money. We called ourselves the Old Colester Society, and we worked out of St. Bridget's Resource Centre up beside Colester Church. Now, both myself and Betty have studied genealogy and have taught genealogy, but have a deep love of volunteering.
Okay.
So I'll hand over to Betty. She'll give you a little bit more.
Okay. We both had volunteered for 9 months with the Genealogy Advisory Service in the National Library. We were asked to teach genealogy in St. Bridget's Resource Centre, and there was great enthusiasm, as Margaret said, for the area. We uncovered some photographs in an archive in the sacristy in the church, and we started going through those, and we were able to identify some of the people in it, but a group grew out of that, and we brought the photographs to a meeting. Now we have people from 13 up to 92 in the group, and the 92-year-old is an absolute treasure. He grew up in Colester. He could identify a lot of the people in the photographs and the places, and the whole thing just grew out of that.
Okay. And Colester, it's quite an old village, isn't it? Like, in that the suburbs kind of grew up around it, but it must be one of Dublin's oldest kind of villages.
Well, the houses, most of the bungalows in Colester were built in the 1920s by they were taken over by the Irish Sailors and Soldiers Land Trust, but they were built for ex-servicemen who had fought in the First World War. And some of the houses still have third and fourth generation families living in them. And we found that quite interesting. Now, the 92-year-old gentleman, his father was in the Irish Guards in the First World War. He grew up in the area and he was able to share his memories of actually living in the area. He's lived there all his life.
And the where we are today, St. Anne's Park itself, do you know much about the history of St. Anne's and the family that lived here?
Well, we know a little bit about it, but we do know that the gentleman, in fact, that Betty was talking about, he actually came down here the evening that the house went on fire in the 1940s. He was with the LDF and he came down here to fight the fire.
Right.
So he was able to give us bits of history of that. I actually can remember the original facade of the house.
Which is right down the end of the avenue, isn't it?
It's right at the very end of the avenue, and I can remember it, and I'm sure Betty does too. And as a child, you'd be brought walking down there. Now, it's certainly the whole area is full of history, and St. Anne's itself, the family, the Guinness family, obviously lived here and used it quite a lot. So, but our focus, hopefully now, will be in our society. We're taking in the whole of the Colestor area, and we're hoping, we've just finished putting together an exhibition which just finished in the last week, which was about the returning heroes and the houses they were going to live in. We have an old Colestor society, not very formal at the moment, but in September we're going to formalise the whole idea.
Okay, and what are you planning to do in September then? What kind of ideas do
we're
you
going
have?
To have a meeting. What we're going to do is, we were fortunate with this last exhibition that many of the descendants of the people came into us with a lot of information, and we're hoping to go forward and next year put on an exhibition which will cover the 1914-18 period, when the people that were living in the houses actually fought in the First World War.
Okay, I'd be really interested.
What we're also hoping is, we did a short induction course with Near FM last week, and we're hoping maybe to do some interviews for Near FM to include some of the people that we've been speaking to, because it's oral history that's very important to both of us.
And if you have some listeners listening in, and maybe they have they have some old photos or something that they think might be of interest, should they bring it along to you or get in contact with the society? Or?
Well, the society is based in the St. Bridget's Resource Centre beside the church, and it would probably be closing for part of the summer. I think it's going to be closed for the month of August. But the receptionist or the manager of the resource centre would be only too delighted to accept any information, photographs, letters, anything on our behalf.
Okay.
It would be much appreciated.
Yeah. And maybe if people are listening in, is there anything you can tell us, something unusual or unique you found out about Colestor over the years that maybe people wouldn't be familiar with, or locals from the area? Is that a hard question?
It's not a hard question, but it's a question that's very close to my heart. It's an answer I have for you. People don't realise that the soldiers and sailors' houses in Colestor are in a conservation area.
Okay.
And people are not aware of it. They're very plain and very simple houses, but it is a conservation area. And I don't think people in Dublin are aware of it.
So this is like the middle third
and in
that
middle
area.
Third, right, Domain, and Abbeyfield, and the main road. All of those houses are under an order of conservation. So if you're going to do anything to your house, you have to actually get onto the council, and they may say no.
Really? I didn't know that at all now. And they're quite popular as well.
They're very popular people. Now, I know that we've been living there for many years, and it's easy living. It's like an apartment, but you have your own garden. The unique thing about the Colestor development was the size of the sites. Everybody got a quarter of an acre. But the fact that they are now in a conservation area is causing problems for some people.
Yeah, I think a lot of people wouldn't realise that, and maybe even would have gone through the process of bidding for houses before they'd... Because it's quite unusual. I know in England there's a lot of this, but that's very unusual.
Yeah, it's a zoning. It's a Z2 zoning, which is similar to conservation. So you can't change the front facade of the houses.
Right, okay. And they obviously have those huge big gardens at the back as well. So was the idea of that they were kind of self-sufficient?
It was, yes. Yeah. The garden suburb movement was in vogue around between 1914 and maybe 1930. It had started in England and it came to here, and it was to give the families a degree of self-sufficiency, so they could grow their own vegetables and possibly make a small income from it, sell the surplus to neighbours or you know.
Yeah, which is all the rage at the moment.
It is,
talking to somebody from the allotments here in St. Anne's now, so, you know.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that's interesting. What about the name Cluster? Do we know where that name comes from itself? Or, I mean, Kill is obviously hill or something, is it?
No, it's a church.
Church of Azra. Azra was some saint. That's as much as we're finding. We're finding some information, but we're really at the moment, we're in the infancy of digging for information. We have got a lot of articles written by people, even that have never been published, and we'll have to do further research on those because we have to be sure of what we're putting out there.
Yeah.
There's one thing I'd like to ask you, just to let listeners know. If they bring something into the resource centre, it will not be taken from them. It will be copied.
Okay.
We don't take any original items.
Okay, that's good to know because people might be a bit precious about bringing stuff in as well. Okay, so you're here today at the Rose Festival. So what are your plans today? Or what have you got set
up? We're just going to have a day out and have a good wander around and have a chat and have a rest after our exhibition.
And enjoy the sunshine.
Yeah, well, that's a good idea, ladies, I think, absolutely. Listen, thanks a million for coming along to talk to us. All the best. And where can people, as you said, it's based in St. Bridget's Resource Centre.
Or they can email us at oldcalester@gmail.com.
Okay, brilliant. Listen, thanks again and best of luck with the project, and we'll talk to you soon. Hopefully, if you make your radio programme, we'll get to listen to that.
Hopefully,
as well.
We will.
So hopefully,
good.
Yeah.
Take care.
Excellent.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Okay, and we're going to take some music from Codeline now. And that was Irish band Codeline with Lose Your Mind, and they're a band that are going from strength to strength. They're very successful at the moment, so they're worth checking out. Now, my next guest that I'm joined here in the St. Anne's Rose Festival is Bill Garrioch from the Irish Transport Museum. You're welcome to the show, Bill. How are you?
Very good, thank you.
Grand.
Excellent.
Now, the Irish Transport Museum, not many people would, not that I'm saying not many people would know, but where is it located?
The National Transport Museum is located in Howth Castle.
Okay.
And we have a selection of trams, buses, trucks, fire engines, horse-drawn vehicles, military vehicles, enough for every taste.
And say, in terms of what would be the oldest vehicle that you would have there?
One of the oldest vehicles goes back to 1883. We've actually two. One is a fire engine, which would have been manually pumped.
Okay.
And the other is an 1883 tram from the Giant's Causeway, number 9. It's the oldest surviving electric tram in the world.
And how do you get hold of this stuff?
Believe it or not, we find them, or people tell us where they know where there's something. We go out and have a look. And bring it. If it's restorable, we bring it back. Right. If not, we record it and take whatever we can off it.
Okay, and so that's part of your remit then? You restore them as well, do you? Okay.
Yeah.
And what's your background then, yourself then?
I've been a chef most of my working life.
Okay, and, well, something different. I thought you were going to say like a car mechanic or something.
No, totally different. And I just got into this because I belong to a model railway club, Model Railway Society of Ireland, and Jim came along about 31 years ago and gave a talk on the Howth tram, and then I joined up. I had nothing to do on a Saturday, so I thought I'll go along and see what happens, and this is what's happened.
This is what you end up
doing. Yeah.
And say, in terms of the trams in Dublin, when did they stop running, the trams in
Dublin? They stopped in 1949.
Right.
But the Hill of Howth tram was a separate system, and that didn't stop until May 1959.
Right,
so
okay.
It continued for another 2 years.
And what was the reasoning behind stopping the trams, do you know, at the time?
I think the infrastructure needed renewing. Some of the trams needed renewing. Buses were seen as a more versatile form of transport. And it was a shame because Amsterdam modelled their tramway system on Dublin.
Mm.
They still got theirs. We're now spending billions getting ours back.
Yeah, it just seemed crazy.
Like
my parents would have remembered the trams, and
they
couldn't believe when they started like building the lines
for
the Lewis, literally over the lines that were originally there. And you have some of those Dublin trams, do you? Or?
We do. One of them is here in the Rose Festival, 224. She was built in 1896, and she went out of service in the 1920s when they brought in the balcony and enclosed cars, which were bigger trams again. She's here because she was one of the trams that would have been around during Jim Larkin's famous lockout in 1913.
All right, okay.
And if you see the ads on the tram, it says join Larkin's Union on one side and it has votes for women on the other.
Oh, really? Which, yeah. And they're original adverts on it?
They're not original, no. Oh. They were put on to celebrate his 100th anniversary.
Okay, yeah.
And we have several events lined up this year for the tram. It's going to Dublin Docks on the 24th of August. The reason being, it was the time that the ships came in from Liverpool to bring in food for the striking tram people and okay. striking workers.
And this is all tying in with the centenary of 1913.
Yeah, so. And it's going then to Glasnevin for a week for Jim Larkin's celebration. He's buried there.
Yeah.
And then it's going to Lucan for one day it's going to Lucan on exhibition. All part of this Larkin anniversary.
Yeah, so it's a busy year then.
Because there was mills there that went out. The workers were involved in the lockout there. So, again, the workers and the trams, it's all intertwined.
Yeah. So it's a busy year then for you, for sure. And how do you move the tram around then?
We move it on a low loader. We actually have it down to a fine art. You winch it up and you winch it off.
Oh, really?
It sounds easy, but we have it down to a fine art.
And do any of the kind of vintage machines down there, do any of them actually run, like the buses and
stuff?
They do,
yeah.
Do you ever take them out?
We take them out now and again, yeah.
Okay, and what other sort of stuff can people expect to see at the Transport Museum?
We have a horse-drawn fire engine, which is steam-powered, and it's all brass, and it goes back to the late 1880s, and that is now wanted for a film, Ripper Street.
Right.
So that'll be going out shortly.
Yeah. Do you get a lot of work like that from props and stuff?
Well,
yeah.
I wouldn't say a lot of work, but we get a bit of work, yeah.
Yeah.
And our museum is only open on Saturdays and Sundays from 2 to 5.
Okay, so people want to go out.
Yeah, we're all voluntary and we don't receive any state funding or anything, so it's all voluntary.
Okay, and where exactly is the museum then?
It's in Howth Castle. If you're coming into Howth from Dublin, you come in and it's on a bend. And it's on your right-hand side. You go up through the gates, go up an avenue, take the first turn right, down another avenue, turn right again, you go into a yard.
Right.
And it's up there, National Transport Museum.
Okay, excellent. And is it a kind of a place you bring kids to? Or?
Absolutely, yeah, definitely.
Okay, and they can kind of get on the...
Yeah, some of them.
All right, and do you have any of the... my dad was a bus driver, so I'm just curious for this. Do you have any of the old buses from the 60s from Dublin?
We do, the ones I would have gone to school on, yeah. You get in the back and hold on the bus pole, absolutely.
That's it. And what about some of the, I suppose, the more recent ones, like even the... the ones I'd remember from the 70s and the 80s.
Yeah, we have them, 70s and 80s, we have them, yeah.
It's funny how people have such an affinity to buses, isn't it? Yeah. Like when you see them on the, if you see them on archive footage or something, people often go, oh, the old orange buses. All I remember is the orange buses with the blue leather seats and you always stuck them in the summer.
Yeah, we've one of them, but it's blue and cream, but it still has the seats to stick to.
Oh, all right, yeah. I must bring the kids out to get them to experience what life was like in the 70s, so...
Well, our president, Michael Corcoran, he always says that these vehicles are full of ghosts. All the people down through the years that travelled on them, why were they travelling on them? You know, all sorts of reasons.
Yeah, and everyone has so many memories about, from going into town when you were a child or those kind of memories. And is there a cost for entrance to the museum?
There is indeed. The entrance to the museum is for adults €3.50, families €9, and OAPs, children €2.
Okay, all right. And just tell people where you are today as well.
We're in the Rose Festival here in Raheny in St Anne's Park. And the tram is down near one of the entrances. And people are free to get on and have a look and go back and experience what people did over 100 years ago.
Okay, listen, thanks a million for coming to talk to us.
You're very welcome.
Okay.
Thank you.
I'm going to take some music now, and this is Likey Lee. And that was Likey Lee with I Follow Rivers. Now, we're back here at St Anne's Rose Festival, and we're now joined by Sean Meehan from the Irish Wildlife Trust. Sean, you're very welcome to the show.
Thanks very much, Debbie.
So, you're here all weekend.
We are.
What's your plan for the weekend? What are you trying to do?
Well, we've a stand here at the Rose Festival, and the plan is to try and interact with as many members of the public and get our message across that we're here, we're a charity organisation, and our aim is to increase awareness and knowledge about Irish wildlife. A lot of people, you know, when we think of, you know, conserving wildlife and the environment, a lot of people tend to think of the Amazon or, you know, the barrier reefs and all that, which are all very important. But we've a great array and diversity of wildlife here in our own country. But sadly, a lot of people aren't very aware of it or aware of the issues that it's facing.
Okay, and say in terms of what's your most pressing issue? What kind of animals are under threat at the moment in Ireland?
Well, I suppose you could argue that many of our species are under threat to a certain degree, some more so than others. We try to spread ourselves out as much as possible to try and cover, you know, right across the spectrum of Irish wildlife. At the moment now, we're heavily involved in raising awareness about the issue facing badgers in Ireland.
Okay.
The badger, most people will know what a badger is. The very familiar black and white animal that generally live in woodlands at night time. That's the general kind of conception of a badger. But badgers, unfortunately, they're under a lot of pressure in the sense that they're legally persecuted by the Department of Agriculture. There's strong evidence that this is what the Department of Agriculture puts forward, that the badgers help to spread bovine TB amongst cattle.
Okay, so you're talking about the kind of annual badger cull?
Yes, the annual badger cull that legally goes on. Thousands of badgers are legally snared in Ireland every year. And the worrying thing about it is that a lot of the Irish public aren't aware that this actually goes on. And it's rather ironic given the fact that the badger is, on one hand, a protected species, as much of our wildlife is, yet we legally snare thousands of badgers. And there is no evidence to suggest that by removing thousands of badgers from the countryside that the incidence of TB is actually falling amongst cattle.
Okay.
And the government puts millions into this every year and over the years, and it's had little effect.
Okay.
So we're trying to push that. We don't deny that badgers, like many wild animals, are carriers of TB. I mean, humans ourselves, we have a different form of the closely related bovine TB, but we're all susceptible to TB. But we're kind of arguing that, well, look, instead of snaring and culling these animals, let's try and push for a vaccination.
Okay.
And see, can we, you know, in other words, keep the badgers, you know, protect the badgers, but also take it, the you know, address the fears of the agricultural community as well.
And what is the reason behind why they think badgers, how do they, I mean, just excuse my ignorance, but I wouldn't have seen much of an interaction between badgers and cattle.
Well, it is. A lot of people, I think, are surprised when they hear that badgers are the kind of the main scapegoat or culprit, or depends who you listen to, when it comes to the spread of TB. Badgers, first of all, badgers are animals that they obtain their food by foraging. They snuffle around in the grass and things like that because their main diet is earthworms and other insects. If a badger has TB, as in any other animal or a person would as well, they tend to perhaps cough a lot. And the thinking is that one form of transmission is that the badgers cough up phlegm onto the grass in the fields. Naturally enough, they're in the grass looking for the worms and that. And cattle come along, graze on the grass and ingest the infected phlegm. And the bacteria then infects the cattle. I mean, you know, nobody, we're not for 1 minute suggesting that that's, you know, that couldn't happen. And, you know, as I keep emphasising as well, we don't deny that badgers do carry tuberculosis, bovine TB. But what we do argue against is that there isn't enough evidence to categorically say, look, it's the badgers that are infecting the cattle herds. I mean, modern farming practices could be to blame as well.
Okay, so if people are kind of interested in getting involved in that campaign or supporting that campaign as well, they could come along to the stand today and
absolutely
find out more, is it?
Yeah, we're here for the 2 days. We've a stand and all there. And if they wanted to come to us about any other wildlife issues,
yeah.
But we have, it's probably our biggest campaign this year now is the badgers. And also as well, you can go onto our website, www.iwt.ie, and there's lots of information and links there about our whole campaign against the culling of badgers.
Okay, and as a parent of young children, I often, when you're out with kids, and sometimes they ask you stuff, and me and my husband are like, we don't know what that is, or we don't know, you know, what that tree is, or what that animal is. And can parents come along? Will they get that kind of information?
Absolutely, yeah. And we're always encouraging people to sign up. We do hold a number of events throughout the year. Over the last couple of years, we're holding a very successful outreach program where we're going into the schools and reaching the young children and getting them interested in Irish wildlife and being able to, you know, we'd like to have that kids can go out and know the names of, say, the common birds, the common plants and that. And then as they get older, hopefully they'll, you know, increase, you know, they'll their curiosity will be increased and they'll try and find out more about it.
Yeah.
But lots of events throughout the year, and we also have, you know, people are always welcome to join up for membership. We have family packs, kids membership and all that as well. So We're nationwide as well. We're not just in Dublin. We've got branches right across the country. So by all means, if there's any parents out there with curious kids that are always asking about what plant or bird that is, you know, we're one of the many charities out there.
Okay, bring them along,
Absolutely,
you'll give them the information.
That's it.
Okay, listen, thanks again for coming to talk to us.
No problem at all, thanks for having me on.
Okay, I think we're going to have some live music in a moment. We're going to have a group called the Prairie Dogs, who are playing here today at St. Anne's Festival. But first of all, I'm going to take some more music. You'll just have to bear with me. And so I'm just going to take some more music and then we'll go back to you. And welcome back to the Rose Festival here at St. Anne's Park. Now we're joined again by Eileen Toomey, who was the herbalist who was on earlier talking to us in her second guise as...
Hello.
Hi. Are you the singer with the band, the Prairie Dogs?
Yeah, okay. We have many fantastic musicians in the Prairie Dogs.
Okay.
Connor, you have a word.
Yeah, we're the Prairie Dogs and this is Ain't No Money.
Yep. Take it away.
Ain't no money, pay the rent is through. There ain't no money, sweetin' baby blue. Ain't no money, fill the plate with food. There ain't no money, nothing left to do. Papa said to me, go out and make some dough. Mama said, son, the winter's getting cold. The baby's just crying and your grandpa's getting old. But you better hurry up, cause the moon's already sold. Ain't no money. $21 ain't enough to pay the rent. Ain't nothing left to do but sit around and pray. I went into town, make a decent wage. Four men told me he'd pay me by my age. $21 ain't enough to pay the way. Ain't nothing left to do but sit around and pray. Ain't no money.
They're on stage now at 3 in the Rose Festival, so if you want to catch them now, they're going
much.
On stage. So thanks a million for coming along, guys. Okay, so we'll take some more music now. As I said, we're here at the Rose Festival, and we're with you until 3:30. So as you can see, there's lots of stuff happening from all the different people that we've spoken to over the last hour or so. And as I said, the Prairie Dogs there are ready on stage now. So if you want to catch them, that was great as well. So we're going to take some more music. And this is a song I actually meant to play the last time, but I didn't play it because I played the wrong song. But this is The Flaming Lips. And that was The Flaming Lips with Yoshime, which was the song I meant to play earlier, as I said. Now, this is a first for me, I have to say, and it could be a first for Near FM, but we're joined in the studio now by the ghost of Brian Brew. You're very welcome, otherwise known as Ian Barber, who is from the Fingal Living History Society, which primarily deals with Viking reenactments, is it?
We do Vikings.
Okay, and so you are the ghost of Brian Brew, essentially, for the day, is it?
There are a lot of advantages to being a ghost.
Okay.
Leaving aside the fact that your mortal life is finished. but I can get into everybody's head and know all kinds of really interesting stuff.
As he stares at me with his eyes. And tell me, Brian Brew, so obviously Brian Brew, there's a connection to Clontarf. What can you tell me about Brian Brew?
Brian Brew was the High King of Ireland in 1014. And he unified Ireland and put armies in the field to fight against the Vikings, to break Viking power. And he won the battle, but then got killed. And so there was no leaders left. And so Sitric Silkenbeard, I'd put me money on Sitric Silkenbeard for the real winner of the battle. King of Dublin.
Yeah.
That was a stunner, yeah. His mother was Gurmley.
You knocked me silent there.
Gurmley was the most beautiful woman of her age. She was the sister of Mael Morda, the King of Leinster. And Gurmley was beautiful, but utterly wicked. She was a poisonous biddy.
Right, okay.
And she stirred the pot in many ways. And she caused a lot of things to happen, but all to make her boy, the King of Dublin, look good.
Okay, and why do you love Brian Brew so much?
Well, because mainly because I inhabited his body when he was still alive, you know.
Right, okay.
So it's still a bit dear to me.
Oh, is he? So yeah. Do you carry him with you all the time?
Huh?
Do you carry him with you all the time?
Brian Brew?
Yeah.
There's the mark of Brew. Split up the middle of the head.
In your head? Oh, my God. So tell me what you're doing here today. You've got the Viking village, which is here.
Yes, we have a small reenactment village here as a holding operation because there are a lot of things going on, as you well appreciate. And so we're really getting ready for the big fighting of the Battle of Clontarf next Easter.
Okay, so you were telling me about this. This is a first for you. This is a biggie that you're trying to organise for next Easter.
There are big battles going on all over Europe. And we, with any luck, will get this aimed to be a permanent ongoing battle if things bounce the right way. And we might have up to 1,000 Vikings on the field, two armies of 500 men on each side.
Okay.
It'll be a series. These battles go on all over Europe, England, Denmark, Poland, Germany, big battles like this, and it's a huge appeal to the crowds.
And do they happen in Ireland, or is this a first for Ireland?
Our reenactments have generally been small. If we're lucky, we'll hit maybe 70 or 80 on the field.
Right.
70 or 80, not nearly as impressive as 1,000.
Wow, I wouldn't have thought so. And you were saying to me earlier that you have to be trained in the use of the weaponry itself.
So. Generally, people are joined the groups, and they will be tested before. If you're not known, you'll get tested. Can you hold the sword? Do you know the basics of safety? Because a lot of people have to go to work on Monday morning, and you don't want three fingers and half your head missing, you know?
I wouldn't have thought so. And if anybody wants, say somebody's listening to this and they're going, God, I'd love to do that. Can you just come along and join your society?
You come along, there are groups, various groups, Mog Row down in Limerick, the Waterford Vikings, there's a big gang of those. There's the Magnus Vikings up in Downpatrick. There are groups all over. When you're giving out the information about the website of Fingal, contact them and they should be able to put you in line for how you go about it.
Okay, so, and if anybody's coming along today to the Rose Festival, what can they see in your Viking village?
They can see the hard, industrious, good Vikings trying to make their way. And they are having a good time here, except they will be spooked by the ghost of the man they killed, Brian Brew. I come back and I'll haunt them wherever I find them.
And tell me, do you frighten small children?
Oh, the Vikings are particularly frightened because they're very superstitious lot. So I'll come out from the bushes when they're thinking they're safe and I'll go... And they run for it.
And do you think Vikings are misunderstood? I mean, there is always a vision of them as just bloodthirsty, you know, warmongers. Or is that what they were?
Yeah, that's pretty much it. Yeah.
Right, okay. So they're not misunderstood at all.
Always known. They were the hard working place, people. And anybody who wasn't a Viking was an outlander. So they had the same value as cattle, just to be used. So when they came to Ireland, the Irish had a good regard for themselves. And the Vikings went, yeah, we're going to beat you and we use you.
Yeah. Okay, well, listen, you wanted me to give out the information for your society. So it's Fingal Living History Society, and the website is flhs.ie. That's flhs.ie. Or you can email flhs@hotmail.co.uk. Is that correct, Brian Brew?
That sounds pretty good to me.
Okay.
I only knew what it meant.
So you're happy with that, Your Majesty?
I am entirely happy as I continue to haunt them all the way to Mosegard in Denmark. I'm there for a similar big battle. 600 or 700 men and a few women on the field battering the heads off each other in
sounds
the sunshine.
Sounds great.
Doesn't it sound great?
And next year I'm coming back as a wench. Didn't I say that?
We can count on that, can we?
Absolutely.
That's great.
Okay, well, listen, thanks for coming and joining us today, and you can catch everything in the Rose Festival as well today. Okay, all right, thanks again. And that was PJ Harvey and Down by the River. Now, I'm here at the Rose Festival in St. Anne's, and we're here until 3:30. And as you can see, there's lots happening. We've had bands on. We've even had the ghost of Brian Boru on 2 seconds ago as well. So there's lots for everybody to see here. So you should get yourself down here. And the sun is blazing down here as well. Now, I'm joined by Brian Hanney. And Brian Hanney is from the allotments, the association that runs the allotments here at St. Anne's Park. You're welcome to the show. Thanks for coming along to talk to us, Brian. And maybe just tell people about, I'm not sure many people would know, there are allotments in St. Anne's.
Okay, the allotment in St. Anne's Park were developed by the Parks Department of the City Council in July 2010. There was approximately 100 plots, and at the time they became available, there was a waiting list of about 600 people. The plots range in size from 64 square metres down to about 30 square metres, and it costs about €150 for a year for a large plot, and it's surrounded by a very high wall, and it's very nice.
Okay, and whereabouts is it? Is it down near where the old garden is, the clock tower? Is it?
It's beside the tennis courts. It's off All Saints Road.
Okay, all right. And so how many allotments do you have there, did you say?
Approximately 100.
Okay.
And we've people of all ages. We've OAPs, we've young families, and we've great range and great mix of people.
And why did you want to set up the allotments? Why did you think that was important to do?
Well, it was set up by the Parks Division here, and myself, I didn't have access to a garden at home, so that's why I was interested.
Yeah.
I was a total beginner, and it's very therapeutic, and it's great benefits, as you can imagine.
Okay, so you were a total beginner when you got your allotment,
yeah,
were you? Okay,
yeah.
So I'd say that was an interesting
few
months, was it?
It was.
And what did you find, like, in terms of... like growing stuff, and I suppose if someone's thinking of growing something, or you know, as thinking of getting an allotment, what grows well in Ireland? Because I always want to know that. What kind of grows well? I know you have different soils and stuff, but
well, this year is a very good year compared to last year when nothing really grew because of all the rain.
Yeah.
If you came to the garden tomorrow, it's open to the public. You'd see that everything is growing in abundance: potatoes, strawberries, raspberries, cabbage, carrots, everything. You name it, we have it. And even things like corn of the cob has grown very well.
Oh, right, which would be very unusual for
very
Ireland,
unusual,
wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Okay. And if people come along today, can they go down to the allotments? And
they're open tomorrow from 10:30 to 5:00. And there's 2 guided tours tomorrow leaving from the information tent here at 12:30 and 2:30 p.m.
Okay. And in terms of, you were saying what grows well, what's hard to grow? What should you not bother planting? Wasting your time.
I've had a lot of difficulty with cabbage, but all the slugs. But we have 3 polytunnels in the wall garden. We have 2 beehives. We have our own community room. We have our own website. We have our own water supply. And we have our own lock-up storage for tools.
Okay. And so do you get a lot of families that will come down there and kind of spend the day and work in the allotment?
Absolutely. And it's great to just hide down there for the day and very therapeutic, you know,
yeah.
And there's a great community spirit and social element.
And I suppose when you think, when I was younger, allotments, it was kind of seen as an old man's thing. An old man would have an allotment, but it's just really grown in popularity. Why is that, do you think?
It's grown in recent years, a bit to do with the recession, and allotments again have become very popular all over the city and in Fingal as well.
Yeah, and I suppose people don't have gardens. There's not as many places with gardens, is there?
There's a lot of people living in apartments that don't have access to gardens.
Okay, now the allotments are full at the moment, as in, are there any available?
The allotments are full, and there is a waiting list, and you need to contact the Parks Division of the City Council if you want to put your name down.
Okay, but it's quite a long waiting list, isn't it?
Quite a long wait list. A few years ago, I know there was 500 or 600 on the list. I'm not sure what the total is at the moment.
Okay, and is there a cost for the allotment then, or...?
Approximately €150 for a large plot for a year, and I think half that for 30 square metres.
All right. And was there a history, because you had the big house here, obviously, in St. Anne's, was there a history of it, like a kitchen garden here as well?
As far as I know, the wall garden used to service the mansion house, which was burned down and demolished in the late 60s.
All right, okay.
So it previously was a vegetable garden for the house, as far as I know.
Right, okay. Yeah, excellent. And if somebody is thinking they don't have an allotment, they are thinking of planting something, what would you... What would you say was an easy thing to grow, first of all?
Easy spuds. Spuds grow everywhere.
Yeah.
Good for the soil. And the fruit seems to be going very well in the park, you know?
Yeah. Well, at the moment,
at
this
the
year.
Moment, yeah, at the moment,
that may not always be the case. Yeah. So tell people tomorrow where they can go then.
They can come down to the allotments, which are on off All Saints Road near the tennis courts from 10:30 to 5:00. Or if they're not sure where the allotments are, they can leave from the information tent here at 12:30 or 2:30 tomorrow. There's two guided tours leaving from here.
Okay. And just on a final question, does it take much time to... It's often something that I think of doing, but I think, would I have the time for an allotment?
It does take a lot of time, but it's well worthwhile.
Yeah, so you have to be cognizant of that before you take on an allotment.
Like. Especially in this weather, it's well worthwhile.
I know, yeah. This is an unusual year. Okay, so listen, Brian, thanks for coming in to talk to us as well. And best of luck with your, I suppose it's not really an exhibition, but best of luck tomorrow.
Open day tomorrow. Yeah,
open day tomorrow. And anybody can come along there.
Absolutely.
If they're interested as
Everybody's
well.
Everybody's welcome.
Okay, we're going to take some music now, and we are going to take some music from the Eels. This is Novocaine for the Soul. And that was the Eels with Novocaine for the Soul. Now, I'm with you here from the Rose Festival in St. Anne's, and we're coming up to the last 20 minutes or so of the show, but I'm delighted to be joined now by Verity Swan, who is the District Governor of the Rotary Club, the Dublin North Rotary Club, and in fact, she's Ireland's first ever female District Governor of a Rotary Club. So congratulations, Verity.
Thanks very much.
All right, so well done. The only first woman?
First woman in the 102-year history of Rotary on this island.
Excellent. Now, I have to say, I'm quite ignorant of what the Rotary Club does. I think we always hear about it, but maybe you can explain to people what exactly it is.
I'd be delighted to. Well, Rotary International is a large service organisation. It was founded in America in 1905. Paul Harris and friends got together, and out of that meeting of five people has grown this enormous organisation, which has, as it were, one of its target aims as making the world a better place for people. So we work in our local communities and we work internationally.
Okay, so what kind of work do you do? What is the work like?
Well, for possibly the best known project would be End Polio. 20 years ago, there were 360,000 cases worldwide. We knew of it in Ireland in 1956, I think that was the last one here. But at that time, it was global. It is now endemic in just three countries. And the World Health Organization and its deputy director, Bruce Aylward, would say that much of that was due to Rotary. And I'm sure everyone knows about Bill Gates, and he too would say that.
Right, and is Bill Gates then, is he involved with the Rotary, is he?
Bill Gates has three times in recent years put forward money and asked Rotary to match it, and we have done that.
Right, okay. So in terms of the eradication of, well, it's not eradicated, but the polio campaign, what exactly, was it fundraising, or how did it work with the Rotary? What did they do?
We would have Rotarians actually working in those countries, Nigeria, Afghanistan, Pakistan, and before that, India, but that was taken off the list quite recently.
Right, okay.
So there are people working on the ground, visiting homes, ensuring that the children are immunised. And then we also have fundraising, and there is a new scheme, End Polio Now. And that was, as it were, thought up first in the UK, Pound for Polio. And members of Rotary will go out and ask their friends and all those that they know, just for £1 each.
Okay, and I suppose people don't realise polio, it's not that long out of Ireland, and there are
not
still
at
people
all.
Who
that is what I was
the
referring
effects,
to.
Yeah.
There is a poster in our tent which would show that.
Yeah.
And again, it is a plane ride away, so we need to work very hard now to eradicate it.
Yeah, and is there a threat of polio returning, I suppose, with people now, some people don't want to get their children vaccinated?
It is wise, obviously.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, but yes. You would, obviously. And the members of the Rotary Club, what type of people are members of the Rotary Club?
People who have a little time to offer, And that depends. So some people can give more time than others, but it is very much a case of giving time. And today, here in St. Anne's, I am Rotarian. I'm a member of Dublin North Club. But as district governor, I would, as it were, have overall care of the 74 clubs in this island.
Right.
It is the whole island, which is very important. Two jurisdictions, two
meaning
education
north
systems.
And south,
absolutely.
Yeah.
And not everyone would realise that. And then worldwide, we have more than 1.5 million members in 32,000 clubs. And a Rotarian is welcome in any of those clubs worldwide. In our tent today, those people who visit St. Anne's tomorrow will see the shelter box tent. That is, again, a project which ensures that there is disaster relief. And that, I think, is called upon every 21 days. For example, there would have been shelter boxes in the Himalayas, in the earthquake situations, mudslides, Guatemala, tsunami, Japan.
Okay.
And every 21 days.
So is there an actual, there's a physical Rotary Club in Dublin North, is there? Or that people,
oh, yes, most certainly.
Okay.
And the
so is there a social aspect of it as well?
Absolutely.
That
the whole idea of Rotary is that people come together, they meet weekly, and they discuss the programmes. Now, if I could talk about Dublin North, our president and past president would be very much involved in education projects. So we go into schools. We have one of our main projects, I suppose, a flagship project, the Youth Leadership Scheme. And that allows 25 young people to go to Strasbourg to speak in the European Parliament each year.
Okay.
Many, many schools get involved in that through their clubs. And it is a tremendous opportunity.
Okay, listen, just tell people where you are at the festival as well, and tell where they what they can, you know, what they can find at the festival. You're here.
Well, we would be delighted to see everyone, and we have our exhibit in a tent quite close to the bus and opposite the Red Barn.
Okay. Brilliant,
area.
The Red Stables. You've
Red Stables.
Way. Okay.
And may I say one other item? In September, last weekend in September, we will be having an open afternoon for members of the community, North Dublin, in the Clontarf Castle.
Brilliant. And anybody can come along to that as well.
Absolutely.
Listen, you're very good. And congratulations on your appointment as well.
Thanks very much.
And thanks for chatting to us today.
All right. Thank you so much, Debbie.
Thank you. Got to take some music now. And this is an old one from Grace Jones. And that was Grace Jones and Private Life. And as I said, we're here in the St. Anne's Rose Festival. And this is the third in our programme from the festivals from the North Side, which is a series of programmes funded under the Sound and Vision Scheme and supported by the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland. Now, I'm joined by two more people who are here today at the festival. First of all, I'm joined by Mike Kavanagh from Stop Food Waste Programme. And then we're going to talk to Trish Kelly then from the Cupcake Store after that. So Mike and Trish, you're welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Okay, so Mike, first of all, we'll start with you. So Stop Food Waste Programme, tell us a bit about that.
Okay. The Stop Food Waste Programme is funded by the EPA through their National Waste Prevention Programme.
Okay, that's the European Protection Agency, is it? Or Environmental?
Environmental Protection Agency, that's right, yeah. So it's the same suite of funding that Ontosh could get for the Green Schools and Green Communities Programme.
Okay.
And basically, it's a national programme that focuses on increasing awareness about food waste and about composting, so food waste and garden waste. And I suppose our motivation is the fact that on average, one third of the food that we buy in our households, we go to the supermarket, we get three bags of groceries. By the time we get home, one of those bags goes directly into the bin. Mm-hmm. And that equates to about 1,000 to 1,200 euros per year per household.
Okay, so I think everyone relates to that. I mean, the vegetables left in the drawer at the end of the week and stuff. I mean, we all have that, don't we?
Absolutely, yeah. You know, you buy the kind of three for the price of two or two for the price of one. You know, it works great when you're buying toilet roll, but it doesn't work so good if you're buying, you know, bags of oranges and things like that.
Yeah.
So that's the kind of primary motivation for the programme. And within the programme, you know, we have a website, stopfoodwaste.ie. But we also run a training program called Master Composter. And we take groups of, you know, on average 20 people from a local community. We work with the local authorities, so let's say South Dublin County Council, Dublin City Council. We run a five-week training course, Master Composter training course, where we train them, teach them everything about food waste reduction, garden landscape reduction, and then we teach them how to build and manage a range of composting systems, everything from a worm bin to a hot pile, you know, to your standard Darlik plastic compost bin that you get from the councils.
Okay, and is that open to anybody to do? Or is...
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay, and is there a cost for it? Or...
No, it's free. It's a funded program. There's a contribution from the local authority. We get the funding from the EPA to pay people like myself, who are the trainers, the coordinators, to run it. So it's free. What we ask in return after the 5 weeks, it's five weekday evenings and two full-day Saturdays, where on the Saturdays we have hands-on workshops where we take all the knowledge that we've learnt in the classroom and put it into the workshop, and we actually build the systems. So you get hands-on experience building these composting systems. And then what we ask the participants to do, it's a community outreach program. We ask them to contribute 30 hours in the year.
Okay.
Coming to festivals like this, we're over by Birdwatchers Ireland. You know, we've a few systems set up. Mm-hmm. People come up and ask us, you know, they say, I want to start composting. I've never done it before, or I've been doing it for years, but it doesn't work. Are they maybe experts?
Okay.
We have a conversation with them. And
you're here all day today, and people can
we're
get,
here all day today and all
kind
day
of
tomorrow. Yeah, absolutely.
I spoke earlier about the vegetable drawer, and there have always been vegetables left in it, but in my house there wouldn't be any of these left. Your cupcakes, you're very welcome to the show, Trish, and your business is the cupcake store, is it?
Yes, that's right. We started the business about 4 years ago. I found myself out of work, and there was very few employment opportunities, and I had previously worked in the catering industry, and my daughter's birthday came up and I decided to do cupcakes, and then somebody was at the party decided to order some for an 18th birthday, and from there I kept on getting small orders, and I decided, right, I'm going to give it a go, set up a website, got HSE approval, all of that, and then so I was operating from home for the first couple of years, and now we've moved into a commercial premises.
Okay.
Myself and my husband are employed full time in it now. We also have two part time people who help us. So the business has really gone from strength to strength.
Yeah,
and we're
that's
delighted.
A lot in 3 years.
Yeah,
like to move from your kitchen to a store and employees.
Yeah,
and
yeah, it was. It, yeah. It was a big move, but we really needed the space and everything. And we've done, we do weddings, we do birthdays, we do communions, we do farmers markets, obviously. This is our third year in the Rose Festival now. We did the street performance championships last week, so quite busy with events in the summer and things like that.
Okay.
And
do you do business? Do you provide to businesses as
yeah,
well?
Yeah, business corporate cupcakes are a big part of our business. We would actually have print facilities where we print out their logos on edible like icing and put them on top of cupcakes, and that seems to be a big thing now with companies just to want to reward their staff. Say on a Friday, it's a low cost way to kind of give something, you know, just to kind of cheer people up, I suppose, you know.
Okay, and tell me, people can come along today and buy some of your cupcakes?
Yep.
And do you have a website as well?
We do. It's called cupcakestore.ie, and we're also on Facebook. It's the Cupcake Store.
Okay, excellent. Listen, guys, thanks for coming to talk to us, and best of luck today from composting to cupcakes, and best of luck with your business as well. And if people want to find out about that course, the Master Composter.
Okay, you can go to the Stop Food Waste website, stopfoodwaste.ie. We also have a Facebook site. It's Master Composter Ireland.
Okay, excellent.
Thank you.
Listen, you've been listening to me. I'm Debbie Hutchinson, and we were here from the Rose Festival in St. Anne's Park. And as I said, this is the third in our series from the Festivals from the Northside series, which is funded by the BAI as part of their Sound and Vision programme. After this, we'll be going to Sports Local Live on Near FM, so stay tuned for all your local sports information. I'm Debbie Hutchinson, and this has been the Rose Festival.
Your alternative across northeast Dublin. 90.3. This is Near FM.